Hello, and welcome to the GIST podcast. I'm your host, Matt Casey, and on this episode, we're going to talk about things that I saw at the recent Materials Research Society fall meeting at Boston's Heinz Convention Center. But first, here's the bit list. A pair of rocket scientists on Indiegogo have a gadget that should let you control just about anything in your house that uses AA batteries from your smartphone. To use the product, called TetherCell, you put a AAA battery into a TetherCell. The TetherCell is about the size of a AA battery, and you put it in place of where a AA battery would have gone. Then you can control it from your smartphone. In addition to allowing you to cut or restore power to the tethered device, TetherCell will tell you how much battery is left. Also in Indiegogo, a company called Key has designed a full Bluetooth keyboard that you can bring with you wherever you go, and it rolls out of a package about the size of a cigarette lighter. If you're one of those people excited about Google Glasses, you may have another option. Vuzix, a company that builds military displays, is now working on a civilian model that will be similar to Google's Glasses. On the subject of smartphone controls, a startup called Kixo has designed an interface for smartphones that will differentiate between touching with the pad of your finger, your fingernail, or your knuckle. It will also differentiate between a stylus and an eraser, giving you five different tools with which you can interact with your phone. On a final note, I checked in this week with Caroline Howe, the grad student at MIT, is competing in the Ideas Global Challenge. Her idea is to make building materials out of the plastic containers that you get candy bars and chips in. To start off, she'd like to turn them into roofing tiles. The final product, she said, would be similar to that poor people in developing countries already use for roofs. But in the long term, she'd like to use the material to make other things, including trash cans. So one day, you may throw your candy wrapper in a trash can made of candy wrappers. You can find out more about that or anything else in this podcast at gistpodcast.com. For this episode, I'm going to focus on the imaging technology I saw on the floor of the exhibit hall. To begin with, we start with Xradia. Now, a lot of the companies at the show had these long company names that I didn't understand what they meant. But Xradia had a very simple description of their product. They called it a 3D X-ray microscope, and I think that gets straight to the point. Speaking for Xradia, we have Arno Merkel, a project manager and researcher for the company. Here's the interview. So let's start off. Tell me about what the machine is and what it does.
All right, thanks. The 3D X-ray microscope comes in a variety of different architectures and forms, but it very simply, it acquires different projections of samples through different angles to create a 3D map of the sample. Whether it's a pore network or different phases within a sample, you can image a sample non-destructively in three dimensions at a variety of different length scales, and then pass it on to the next destructive technique, typically. And so what it is essentially a fully encased laboratory system with an X-ray source and a variety of different detectors, as well as some focusing optics. It crosses quite a large length scale variation to do non-destructive imaging of any object, whether it's a rock sample or any material science type sample, metal, ceramic, or even biological samples. We've seen quite a number of uses in that area.
So you said this is a non-destructive technique, which means that the sample that you put in, you can pull out at the end. What's the advantage to that?
So the advantage to that is principally, particularly in the material sciences, is that the holy grail really is to understand mechanisms of deformation or mechanisms of evolution or growth or coarsening of a sample. And that's, in essence, imaging a sample non-destructively in 3D and quantifying that structure, and if it's non-destructive, you can now image that at another state. So you can apply a heating experiment or a compression, some mechanical deformation to the sample, then image the very same region of the sample and look at how the pores deformed or understand and quantify the microstructural changes from an identical region of a sample through its lifetime, whether it's failing or whether a crack is propagating through the sample. Only a non-destructive technique can rely on imaging that very same region of the sample, whereas if you take other 3D techniques for opaque samples, such as serial sectioning or cutting a cross-section and looking in the SEM, you're very much reliant on statistical ensemble approaches where you're taking representative volumes of different areas and drawing conclusions based on statistics from that.
So you have an image on here behind you of a scan of a crack that was taken from an X-ray. Tell me why this is able to do that while something else couldn't.
So looking at crack propagation, I mean, understanding the deformation of materials in these metastable states, other techniques, if you would take a crack exists in three dimensions. It follows oftentimes a very tortuous path. It runs along different elements of the microstructure. In order to image that and quantify the length of the crack, oftentimes the traditional technique would be to serial section it or polish cross-section the side of it and then image that laterally. Well, in that process of modifying the sample and sectioning it, there's a high likelihood that you're modifying that sample. So now the strain fields have changed, but also the crack may have propagated as well. So it truly cannot be done in a destructive way and still maintain proper reliance on understanding and quantifying the length of the crack or the area, the surface area of the crack. And now doing that in three dimensions where you can segment the exact volume, the exact surface area of that crack, you can now afford to do that over multiple states of that crack's propagation. So you can continually cycle the sample, and you often look at these reinforced composite materials where you're applying different forces to it, quantifying exactly how long the crack has propagated, applying another force, and getting toward the fracture toughness of the material in a quantitative way by imaging it repeatedly non-destructively. It really lends itself quite nicely to 3D X-ray microscopy, in particular that application.
So now you're a few steps away from the consumer, but how does this product make the world better for consumers or make products better for consumers?
It's quite diverse in its applicability. I guess we've seen our primary segments that we serve are the electronics industry, semiconductor, geosciences, the material sciences, which has probably the broadest spectrum of applicability to different consumer materials, making materials better, as well as the life sciences. And so each of those areas we've seen downstream relations to products that are made that are improved, whether it's drug analysis of drug delivery type samples, looking at scaffold materials in bioengineered materials to understand the 3D structure of those, or whether it's looking at potato chips. You can understand the structure of oil and starch, and that's very, very practical, consumer-facing type of an application. And then in the electronics industry, I mean, everyone has a cell phone these days, and they're starting to stack these packages in three dimensions, and they have to bond these with small solder bumps. And it turns out the strain now in those packages and the stresses that are applied to these features now cause a number of failures within there, and cracks are form an opportunity to make a number of cracks and defects within these packages. And for us to zoom into small regions of that sample and understand the failure mechanism much more rapidly than by sectioning techniques lends itself quite nicely to that application, and which is then passed down to the consumer in more reliable electronics and in that way.
Let's go back to potato chips. What would this machine tell you about a potato chip?
Well, you can actually take a look at any type of food. There's a lot of engineering that goes into food and how you process the food. It's just like if you're looking, mixing a few metals together and coming up with a composite material or something like that. Food is in a sense very similar. You want to get the distribution perhaps of oils and starch and pores just right so it tastes better, or it has some property, or it feels less fatty. So being able to have sufficient contrast with our detection system, you can now distinguish low Z elements from one another quite nicely and use phase contrast as well to see the boundaries between similarly attenuating materials and quantify the 3D distribution of the structure of for instance, a potato chip, and then really try to understand how the processing conditions affected that structure, so it can be more repeatedly reproduced in the laboratory or in the fabrication facility.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Today's music comes from Ted James. Ted James is an electronica artist out of Providence, Rhode Island, who dabbles in all kinds of music. Here's a sample of just one kind of thing he does. This track is called Yesterdays. It's been nearly a decade, now it's so far away. I'm still having those flashbacks, man, I had one today. I can still smell that greenhouse, see that smile on. For more information on Ted James, go to tedjames.info. That's Ted James, TEDJAMES.info, INFO. And now, back to our coverage of the Materials Research Society 2012 Fall Conference. Now we turn to a company called UES. UES makes a product called RoboMet 3D, which, like the X-radio microscope, scans things that are very small, but the difference is the RoboMet destroys the sample as it scans it, so you can only scan it once. Speaking for UES, we have Eric Hilton, a sales engineer. Here's the interview. All right, so tell me about the product that you have here at the show.
Okay, RoboMet 3D is an automated serial sectioning system. Now, serial sectioning is the process of getting a series of two-dimensional images and creating a three-dimensional model out of those two-dimensional images. So you can stack them up and use various software programs that will actually create a 3D model. There are other ways to do this, which are like scanning electron microscopes and things like that, but they're very, very expensive. For a fraction of the price, RoboMet 3D can come in and it will give you accurate, consistent data time and time again, much, much faster than the manual methods that are currently used in this process.
And where would that be useful?
New materials development, failure analysis, really a very broad spectrum of options.
All right, give me an example, something concrete.
Okay, so if you were to develop a new material, and it was a new aluminum alloy, and you were trying to determine exactly what that aluminum alloy had inside of it, you could take a cross section, put it on a microscope, an optical microscope, and you'd get one cross-sectional image. Well, that's good, assuming that cross-sectional image is representative of the entire sample. If it's not, if you had gone a millimeter in, you would get a different representative of that material. So if you notice, based upon that micrograph and those models, and what is going on in that model, you can determine, one, if the material that you just made was good or bad. And the idea is to be able to take that model and link it to the material's final properties. So if we were to make a final product out of that, based upon that model, what type of properties would that final material have? Of strength properties or weight characteristics, all kinds of things.
So how large of a sample are we talking about when you do these scans?
Generally, it's about, it fits within an inch and a quarter or a 2-inch mount. So it's a relatively smaller sample, and it's probably 25 millimeters thick. So it's about an inch and a half thick, 2 inches thick, somewhere in there.
So this is for very small samples,
yes.
Very spot samples of, right. Of
yes.
Larger materials.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you've got this aluminum alloy. What kind of applications would this alloy have?
I could have any applications. It was designed and developed for the Air Force. So obviously there are Air Force applications that are most prevalent, but you could have airplane frames, airplane wings, shells, any type, anything like that. You could also have, we have some customers that are using polymer matrix composites like we see over here. These polymer matrix composites are designed to do weight reduction. So you have very strong fibers, just like similar to rebar concrete, where you've got metal and then poured concrete around it so that you get strength characteristics without excess weight. So same way, if you decrease it to a smaller scale, if you put fibers and in that epoxy, so you pour epoxy around a metal fiber, you get very, very strong characteristics, but a fraction of the weight.
And how long does it take to scan one of these samples?
We generally do about 5 to 12 minutes per slice, depending on the material and the setup procedures.
And how many slices are we talking about?
Usually most samples are, we will analyze somewhere between 100 and 1,000 slices per sample.
Between 100 and 1,000.
Mm-hmm. So, and the glory of RoboMed is that you can set your sample in, set it up, walk away, and come back the next day, and you've got your sample done.
And it sounds like it would take the whole day to scan the sample.
It's about 100 slices a day is generally where we are. So 1,000 slices, you know, you're looking probably in multiple days, probably a week. So
you're talking 1,000 slices of something that's half an inch thick, right?
Mm-hmm. So now our slice thickness goes anywhere from a quarter micron, so 250 nanometers, all the way up to some people use 20 microns or 30 micron slices.
All right, and I saw elsewhere in the show a 3D X-ray microscope.
Okay.
What advantages does this offer over that?
3D X-ray microscopes, they're generally very, very expensive. RoboMet comes in right under $300,000 versus, you know, with scanning electron microscopes and X-ray microscopes, you're looking up closer to $1 million. So this is a much, much cheaper option for that. And this gives you absolute real data as opposed to somewhat theoretical data unable to see exactly what's happening. X-ray is going to go into the sample, pull out an image. This is a destructive test, so you actually see an optical image of exactly what's happening on that sample.
But it is a destructive test, so you can't test it over time.
Correct. Correct. This is a destructive test. So if you once you've analyzed a sample, that sample's gone, or you can continue analyzing it. Generally, like I said, they're rather thick samples, and you can get 1,000 slices in 1 millimeter. So you can do a whole sample. You can come back to it 5 years later and do another test on it exactly the same if you need to get more information about it.
So you guys have worked with the Air Force. Are there any other industries that you've worked with?
Oh, quite a few. It's mostly academic material science labs and also some other government labs, DOE, DOD, government labs that are working with it. But we're also in GE and some other industry partners like that.
Now, you're quite a few steps away from the consumer, but how does this matter to the consumer in the long run?
It all comes back down to the link between a material's characteristics and the properties that it'll have in the future. If you can pull up a guidebook and look at it and say, okay, I want a certain material for this airplane frame or for this product or whatever the product is, if you can pull up a certain book and say, okay, well, I need and link it back to exactly what material you need, it takes a lot of the guesswork out. You do a lot of the research up front. You can start to link how a material looks on a microscope to its final properties.
Well, that sounds useful.
Mm-hmm. It's very useful. So it eliminates a lot of the guesswork. It eliminates a lot of the experimentation down the line.
All right. Anything else you think I should know about this product?
I don't think so.
Well, then thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Now it's time for our final segment, where we take a look at past visions of the future and see how they measure up to the modern day. For this episode's clip, we take a trip all the way back to 1981 for a KRON news report out of San Francisco about the future of newspapers on the internet.
Imagine, if you will, sitting down to your morning coffee, turning on your home computer to read the day's newspaper. Well, it's not as far-fetched as it may seem.
17 stories up in his fashionable North Beach apartment, Richard Halloran is calling a local number that will connect him with a computer in Columbus, Ohio. Meanwhile, across town in this less-than-fashionable cubbyhole at the San Francisco Examiner, these editors are programming today's copy of the paper into that same Ohio computer. When the telephone connection between these two terminals is made, the newest form of electronic journalism lights up Mr. Halloran's television with just about everything the Examiner prints in its regular edition.
This is an experiment. We're trying to figure out what it's going to mean to us as editors and reporters and what it means to the home user. And we're not in it to make money.
Engineers now predict the day will come when we get all our newspapers and magazines by home computer, but that's a few years off.
Well, it takes over 2 hours to receive the entire text of the newspaper over the phone, and with an hourly use charge of $5, the new telepaper won't be much competition for the 20-cent street edition.
Before we get to the prediction part, let's take a moment to acknowledge the difference that has happened in 30 years. At the time, and you'll have to see the video to see this, the modem they used was a phone put in a cradle. Additionally, $5 per minute of online time, we haven't seen that in a long time. All of it is flat rate at this point. As far as the predictions go, this is stunningly accurate for a 30-year-old report. The report predicts that in the not-too-distant future, we'll get all of our news over computers. The report didn't predict that tablet computers and smartphones would be the main delivery device for this news, but they knew that it would be over computers. That's it for this episode of the GIST Podcast. As always, you can find out more about anything you heard on the podcast at gistpodcast.com. That's GISTPODCAST.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at GIST Podcast or find us on Facebook. Just search for GIST Podcast. To make sure you don't miss an episode of the GIST Podcast, subscribe to us on iTunes. We'd like to give a special thanks today to Ted James, who provided the episode's music. You can find out more about him at tedjames.info. Thank you for joining us, and you should hear more from us in a couple of weeks. I'm not sure which way time travels. We could still be alone.